Welcome to the American Churchmen podcast, where we encourage men to live out their biblical calling and obey the word of God and know God deeper and be men and act like men of courage. I am your host, John Harris. With me, my co-host, Matthew Pearson. How are you doing, Matthew?
I'm doing good, John. And I'll ask you the same thing. How are you doing? We didn't have any time beforehand to start talking. No. We just jumped right into it. So you've been doing good, man?
I've had a long day. I've basically been running full steam since about 5 a.m. So Ooh. I'm a little tired, but doing okay. I was actually on another podcast and I was, I have to end right before, like 10 minutes before. I can't go in. And of course, it was like 3 minutes before. So I threw everything together and here we are. But happy Daniel Penny Day.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah. What a glorious thing that is.
So Trump said you would get tired of winning, and I'm Matthew. I'm
still not tired.
Keep me accountable. I don't want to get tired. But
you won't get tired of winning. Don't worry.
Okay. All right. You have to hold me accountable. I need accountability.
I got you. No worries.
So we're going to talk about that today, the whole Daniel Penny thing, which happened an hour and a half south of me. It was in New York, and people don't take the subways in New York anymore. The Daniel Penny thing actually was one of the incidents. There was a bunch of them. I mean, but that was one that people just said, you know what, I can't do it. And what a day to be alive. I'm so glad that he was exonerated. Before I forget, I think we have a website now. So I should probably find that and show it.
And your camera just cut out, John. Don't know what's up with that.
Uh-oh. Can you see me now?
I can. Yes.
Yeah, I disappeared for a second. All right. So it is. This is the first time I get to announce this. I've been saying we should have a website, but we actually have one. TheAmericanChurchman.com. TheAmericanChurchman.com. is the website, and that's just where you can find our podcasts and links, and you can share stuff on social media if you want to. We really appreciate that. Of course, we're powered by TruthScript, so if you want to donate to the cause of the American Churchman, you can go to truthscript.com, scroll down to the bottom where it says donate. But here's our own webpage. There it is, the American Churchman podcast in audio form, video form, and it just tells a little bit about us too. So if you want to know more about Matt Pearson, or me, I guess you can find out about us right there. So there you go. And we'll probably add more stuff as the time goes on. We haven't really talked about merch or anything. I mean, that seems like today with podcasts, you're supposed to have merch. I don't know.
Yeah.
I mean,
got to rake in the cash somehow, you know?
Yeah. I was showing you my other upload that I'm doing right now, but we are on Rumble. I should say that we are on Rumble too. If people want to check us out, but, YouTube, Twitter, X, now is where you can, and Facebook is where you can leave a comment if you have a comment or a question for Matthew or myself. So, all right, before we get into Daniel Penny and stuff, let's talk about the attributes of God. What are we doing today?
Yes. So today, this one may be a bit shorter, partly because this is more so just an expansion on our attribute last week, which was God as Spirit. And then also just because I sort of threw this together very last minute because Hurricane Milton and Helene pushed classes a little bit into a weird schedule. So my day was a very long day today. I was in class from 9 to 5. So literally 9 to 5 job for today. But it's going to be on the invisibility of God. So just to get us started with, I'm going to read 2 Bible verses, break down what the invisibility of God is and some of the implications for certain debates held among Christians and things like that. So the first Bible verse we'll be reading is from Deuteronomy chapter 4, verses 14 through 16, and it reads, "And the Lord commanded me at that time," this is Moses speaking, by the way, "and the Lord commanded me at that time to teach you statutes and judgments, that ye might do them in the land whither ye go over to possess it. Take ye therefore good heed unto yourselves, for ye saw no manner of similitude on the day that the Lord spake unto you in Horeb out of the midst of the fire, lest ye corrupt yourselves and make you a graven image, the similitude of any figure, the likeness of male or female." Notice in verse 16 or verse 15 there talks about how they saw no form in the day when God spoke to them. Colossians 1, verses 13 through 15, the Apostle Paul states, "Who hath delivered us from the power of darkness and hath translated us into the kingdom of his dear Son, in whom we have redemption through his blood, even the forgiveness of sins, who is the image of the invisible God, the firstborn of every creature." So these verses lay out here that, well, at least in Deuteronomy, part of the reason the Israelites are prohibited from making images is because in the day in which God spoke to them, there was no form of him revealed. And this is further clarified. Why is there no form that God has revealed himself to them in? Well, that's because God in and of himself as God does not possess a form. Remember, our attribute last week was that God is spirit. That means he is incorporeal. He is without a physical body. So because of that, the invisibility of God is an attribute which necessarily flows from the fact that he is a spirit, he's incorporeal, and from the fact that he is simple. God is not made up of parts, which include physical parts, because if he was made up of a physical part, that would be corporeal. That would therefore be visible in some sense or the other. So for God to be invisible is to say that his very essence is not something which can be perceived by physical eyes. Now, there are like moments in scripture where God will condescend and reveal himself in some form or the other, but the form by which he reveals himself is never the very essence of his own being. So for example, the burning bush, when God appeared to Moses, Moses perceived the burning bush. He saw the bush burning. But is it really right to say that he necessarily saw the invisible God in that moment? No, of course not. So this is just a very important doctrine because, like I said, it flows from the fact that God is spirit. It flows from his simplicity. And one of the primary reasons that we have the second commandment, as I mentioned earlier, is which prohibits the making of graven images, is that any image which tries to depict God will necessarily fall short of his glory by virtue of the fact that he is not able to be depicted because he is invisible. You cannot fully capture his essence. And this is a very important conversation to have because there are, this leads to a lot of the debates within Christianity among differing traditions, such as the Reformed tradition over against some other traditions where there's debates over whether it is permissible to make images of Christ. Because notice in Colossians 1 verses 13 through 15, it says that Christ is the image of the invisible God. And so people will say, okay, yes, Christ is God, but because Christ made himself visible, and because the prohibition was against making images was because God is invisible, therefore we can now make depictions of Christ who is God because Christ has revealed himself. And we who are Reformed, who may hold to the traditional Reformed position as I do, we would push back on that in numerous ways. Like while saying, yes, God, Christ did become visible, we still don't actually have an image of what he looked like. Any attempt to capture an image of Christ, even in his own like a humanity, would still fall short of who he is because he is divine, and because his divine nature has sanctified his human nature, such as that even in his humanity, you can't really capture the perfection of who he is because he was without sin. So, but that's a whole other conversation for another day. But I think that the invisibility of God plays a good role in helping us understand debates between those who say images of God are permissible or not permissible, et cetera, et cetera. But yeah, that is the invisibility of God in a nutshell.
And he would have to be invisible to be in all places, to be everywhere. I mean, some of these attributes that we talk about do all fit together, and some rely on others to be true or to make sense, I suppose. So,
yeah.
Yeah, it's kind of a, I guess it's one that's taken for granted. Like everyone understands that God's spirit, and that means he's invisible and he can manifest himself, but it does have implications. So thank you, Matthew. I appreciate
it. No, certainly. I think a lot of these things are just, it's so many of these attributes are things that you kind of just already know, but it's not until you like think about them, you're like, oh yeah, that actually matters, which is good because this is all very theoretical stuff. But theology, as Petrus van Maastricht puts it, is both theoretical and practical. And so if you can only theologize and think about theology, but it doesn't actually draw you towards contemplation of God and order you towards love of him, which then orders you towards love of neighbor, like it's kind of, you know, that's it's all in point. Vain. So, yeah, that's why I appreciate these little attribute of God discussions. But yeah,
well, I appreciate you and taking the time to explain this to the audience. And I don't know if your seminary work. Oh, but I should ask that. Like, how is your seminary stuff going, by the way? I mean, I know you sit here in class all day. Last week, you had a lot of tests coming up.
That is true. Yeah. So I was taking 4 classes a semester. I've finished 2 of them now. And I just have 1 final paper due on Friday. And then I have to have my Greek exam finished by next Tuesday. And so that one, I'm not worried about the paper. That's going to be cake. I'll be fine. It's this Greek exam that I'm getting nervous about. Greek 2 has been participles and all that.
Did you do them in 1 semester, Greek 1 and 2?
No, I did Greek Greek 1 intensive over the summer. It was about 3 weeks. So Monday through Friday from 8 to 12.
Oh, goodness.
Yeah.
Man, that would be tough, jamming that into your head over a course of 3 weeks.
Yeah, that was not fun.
It builds on itself too. So, like, Well, all right. Well, let's talk about Daniel Penny a little. Well, actually, there's a few articles we could talk about. Daniel Penny's where we want to camp out here, but I wanted to just ask you if you had watched Gladiator 2. Have you seen
that? I've not watched Gladiator
2. You don't have any time. No. You're in seminary. What am I thinking? Okay, so you haven't watched Gladiator 2. We have a review of Gladiator 2 up there, and basically it says it's kind of a second class, kind of a dumb movie. Don't go see it unless you want to see it. I mean, be disappointed. It's if you expect Gladiator 1, it's not that, but it goes into the details of why that is. So anyway, we also had a piece on the website about the whole, you know, woke right, James Lindsay, American reformer stuff. So if we have more time, maybe we can go into that as well. But right now, the big story, of course, is justice done in the Penny acquittal. Timon Klein wrote this for us. And we
got to have him on one day.
Yeah, actually, we probably could have had him on.
You know, on my other podcast, the Irenic Protestants podcast, I invited him on and he came on. And that was the one episode that I was not able to make with him on. It made me so sad because I forgot it was my ex-girlfriend's birthday that day. We were not exes at the time, but made me sad.
It doesn't sound, I can see the regret that you have for not being able to be with Timon.
Yeah, because I'm not even with this girl and I miss Timon just to talk to this. Whatever. It's no big deal. We're past that.
The issues that Zoomers have. All right. Well, Timon was gracious to write this. He's an attorney. It says editor in chief of American Reformer and director of scholarly initiatives at the Hale Institute of New St. Andrews College. And a fellow at Craig Center at Westminster Theological Seminary. Good grief. That's a mouthful.
Busy man.
Yeah. My goodness. I didn't even know he was a fellow at the Craig Center at Westminster Theological Seminary. He doesn't tell me these things. He's quite an accomplished guy.
Mm-hmm.
And this is a short piece, but he talks about how a quote from, or a paraphrase from, Thomas Carlyle, that heroes provide patterns, dispositions, and actions to emulate. And this story,
do you
want to
put the article on screen?
Oh, is it not on screen? I'm sorry.
Nope.
Yep. I would love to do that. So here it
is. Excellent. There we go.
And this whole story is about heroes. Psychology Today, he says, lamented that men lack role models. You actually talked about this when you, I had you on the Conversations That Matter podcast, that Trump is a role model for so many Gen Z guys because they literally don't have any role models anywhere.
Yeah, certainly.
So we're lacking in that. And when we get a role model, sometimes like Daniel Penny, who does something brave, he's then punished for it. And it just, what society should do in recognizing someone who's heroic and brave, we do the opposite, and oftentimes kick those people to the curb, and it's not right. So,
and I would say that, like, there is like a bit of a parallel between, like, I mean, they're obviously not at all the same by any stretch, really. But I mean, Daniel Penny and Trump can both like be seen as, I've been in like somewhat similar situations. Just with him, it was on a more individual, smaller level. Whereas with Trump, I mean, the guy was already rich. He didn't need to do any of that, but he intentionally like put himself in the way, like, for this country. You can say, oh, it was for his pride or his ego. But the fact is, the guy could have retired very comfortably and easily. And now, like, he almost got locked up. He's almost gotten killed, what, 2-3 times now. You could tell that, like, he's, you know, it's an act of heroism on Trump's part. He's actually sacrificing something to do it. Now, people can roll their eyes because, oh, he's only the most powerful person in the world now. But again, the guy has money. He could have retired very easily, lived a very comfortable life, not had any charges against him. Same way, Daniel Penny could have just, you know, turned the other, just walked the other way and not interfered. So, you know, we don't have to downplay like the connections that could possibly be there, just on very different levels.
Yeah, that's a good point. So, I mean, is Daniel Penny, I mean, this was from what, March 1st, 2003, when, or 2023, when this started. For people who don't know, he was on the subway and there was a guy on the subway who was making threats, and a homeless guy, as I understand it, but he ended up, it appeared that he was threatening people. We'll put it that way. And they, Daniel Penny, and I don't think he was the only one in the video that was trying to get this guy to calm down, but Daniel Penny's the one that ended up putting his arm around this guy, put him in a chokehold, essentially. And he's a Marine. I think he was 24 years old, if I'm not mistaken. And it was part of his training. I wasn't intending to kill the guy, but the guy, I guess, ends up, he dies, being put in the chokehold. And so I don't know if you want to add any details to that. That's quite the summary that I just gave, but
no, yeah, that's about it. There are like some similarities as well to the Floyd situation. So
yeah,
a little bit.
And Kyle Rittenhouse, and yeah. He puts him in the chokehold, and of course, seeing the Floyd situation, I remember the optics of it, and especially being in New York, I thought, oh no, you know, I think we're all scared that we're going to see that again. And when Trump won, I literally thought, I was driving in Tennessee and I was like, I'm not going to make it home. Like, I need to hunker down for a few days. Like, it's going to be bad. And nothing happened. And, nothing ever happens. Yeah.
Nothing ever happens.
Actually, I wrote this down this morning because I was reading an article in the Daily Signal about it. But so I didn't know this, but Hawk Newsom, who he's come up before, I think, on my other podcast, he called for black vigilantes to descend into major cities Monday to retaliate. So here's my question. Has BLM run out of steam? Because, I mean, maybe that we're still waiting for it to happen, but I haven't seen anything substantial materialize. Whereas in 2020, this would have been like crazy. We would have been seeing flipped over trucks and people stomping on police cars. And like, what has happened? That is one of the things that I have wondered a little. Like, I think I can gander at an answer, but it is remarkable that in the course of just a few years, it's kind of a ho-hum. You know, the left is mad, but they're not really doing anything. I don't know. Did the money dry up? Like, what's going on? So anyway, that's what Daniel Penny did. And he ended up going to court, and he had second degree manslaughter and negligent homicide charges, two separate charges. Both of them threatened to put him in prison. The manslaughter charge was dismissed on Friday after the jury was deadlocked in deliberation. The jury acquitted Penny on the negligent homicide charge on Monday. And the former charge required that Penny killed Neely intentionally without premeditation, but also without justification. The later charge required proof that Penny killed Neely by acting negligently through without malice. And ultimately, the prosecution could prove neither. And for a good reason, Penny did neither. So, this is great. I mean, I almost, like, you think of Derek Chauvin in jail and you're like, man, like that guy, like it was literally 3 years later and he wouldn't have been in jail probably.
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, this is New York. This is not a area that you would expect this to happen in either. So, what other things to talk about on this?
This part of the article was really good.
What, the part where
the hero aspect?
Right
under that.
Penny, a former Marine, was destined to become the next Derek Chauvin moment. That's what a lot of us thought, and the left tried to make it just that, except this time the American people, battered and bruised, weren't so gullible or willing. Much like Kyle Rittenhouse, Penny's case became a cultural flashpoint, a microcosm of corrupt justice system and confused society. While the rest of the country was under medical house arrest, Black Lives Matter burned down the country. So he's going back to memories I don't want to relive, but what BLM did.
He's making a good point near this last paragraph when he mentions how vigilantism is that which emerges, like, not like because it's just out of necessity when you're in a state of anarcho-tyranny, which is a very important concept that
people get
in trouble for talking about, because a scary evil guy said it or something like that.
Oh, Sam Francis. Yeah, Sam Francis
is the one to coin the term. Sam Francis, yes. But no, I mean, it's just simply an observation of reality that when your governing officials are not willing to enforce the law, you are held under a state of tyranny, not necessarily by the state, because they're not actually being tyrants, because they're just doing nothing. They're handicapped. You are being held under a state of tyranny by people who are able to and willing to commit violent, heinous crimes because they know they won't get in trouble. And so when law enforcement, when the state, when these people are not willing to actually do anything about it, that's anarcho-tyranny. And that's where vigilantism emerges, is because if they're not going to, if no one else, if those things that God has put in place to defend us will not defend us, then we need to do something, essentially. So, yeah.
Nice. Yeah. So I'm noticing someone's posting, David Laity's posting some, I'm not familiar with this stuff, but articles about BLM leaders that are getting prosecuted for various things. Yeah, it's about time. I mean, obviously there's not going to be the level to which we'd love to see justice, but mm-hmm. to just know that there's some justice being done on this stuff is good to know. So, So I don't know if there's anything else you wanted to say about this, but, Penny took a big risk, especially, I mean, I can't imagine, like, would you, here's the question I think for Christian men out there, like, would you in his situation on a subway, would you do what he did? Or would you just walk the other way and say, not my problem? Or, you know, try to, you know, call a police officer. But like, as soon as you put your hand on this guy, and this guy's a Black guy, right? So, you know, the narrative that the media uses, you are for life now going to be marked. And it's not guaranteed that you're going to be a hero. In fact, the track record is you will probably be vilified for it. Would you still do it, Matthew?
Oh, you're putting me on the spot now.
I don't know. You're the only one that can talk to me right now. So
that's I don't know. There's a lot to consider about that. It takes a lot of courage to do what he did. And, you know, if I had like a family there, you know, that would certainly incentivize me a little bit. But then you also have to consider, well, do I go to jail while my family's out there? You know, so there's a lot to consider. I would love to say that I would be bold, courageous, and do it, like, consequences to hell, you know, I just do it. But, you know, I do consider, I'm like, what if I'd hesitate a little bit? So I don't know. Like I said, I'd like to say I'd do it, but I can't say.
It's easy to say it. It's harder to actually do it.
Yeah.
When push comes to shove, there's no doubt about that. We all think we'd be heroes. And I mean, I don't know if you've been in a situation where it did call for violence. And I have. And, you know, once your adrenaline goes, it's so hard to control that. It overwhelms you. I think, you know, in law enforcement and in the military, they teach you how to control that. But you think you would have all this energy and be a hero, and then, like, the energy doesn't necessarily come to you. And it's like, it's so much easier to, when you have flight or fight, to flight.
Mm-hmm.
But one of the things here I think is worth asking is a quote from Aaron McIntyre, our friend. I think you know Aaron, right?
Yeah, I've met him in person once before, yes.
So you're best friends. And
yeah, absolutely. Yeah, that's why he doesn't follow me back on Twitter.
Aaron, really? Follows me on Twitter. So I don't know what's going on. I think he follows me. I have to check now. Arn McIntyre, the first step to making America great again is honoring brave men. What do you think? Is that the first step? I don't know if that's.
Yeah, I certainly think that's a part of it, because we live in an age, and I believe if I'm remembering rightly, the Tymon kind of touched on this in his article. I don't have it pulled up with me, but where he essentially says that, like, we're all about, like, not being confrontational about anything, including necessary situations. And part of what makes someone heroic is that they are willing to be confrontational. And our society is, like, people are conflict avoidant. People hate conflict. People would rather, like, people don't like to argue. People don't like to actually, like, get, they just want to avoid problems. And part of being a hero is being someone who's willing to confront problems head on and resolve it and take care of it, which our culture is afraid of. And I would say it's a flaw of our culture. So if you do want to get around that at both the micro and the macro level, you ought to elevate heroes. And I mean, that's just natural demand that he have heroes and that he honor them. You know, you think of even like the commandments of like, honor thy father and mother, like that extends beyond just mother and father, especially if you read any of like the confessional documents of magisterial Protestantism. Like that extends to your forefathers, that extends to your grandparents, yep. That extends to those in political office, that extends to church authorities. So it's a matter of justice, basically. What is someone's due? And if someone does a heroic act, part of that which is their due is to receive honor for what they have done. And thus, as an act of justice, you need to honor those who have done heroic things if you are made aware of that which they have done, because that's part of respecting the dignity of heroic and courageous men. So that's what I would say about that.
Yeah, I think the Romans called it pietas, honoring the fathers, but the fathers was plural. It was not just we actually, I think, do think of this because of like Father's Day. It's like it's just your father. We have a separate day for Grandfather's Day, but honoring fathers in scripture goes far beyond that. And I was thinking like honoring men, I think Aaron's right about this, because honoring men that are heroes, you know, assuming we have the same definition of a hero, which is someone who exhibits the cardinal virtues, prudence, justice, fortitude, temperance. And, you know, fortitude, you know, also, you know, being courage or bravery. They also are the ones that are tasked with the role of protecting society. They protect the family, but they also protect the broader society. They're the ones that make up your military force. I should say your effective military force, because we know that there are now women in the military in various roles. I'm not saying they can't, you know, I'm not saying they don't have any use whatsoever, you know, like,
yeah,
like
watch Mulan.
No, women can, I mean, yeah, like, you know, there's certain things they can certainly do. But the point is that men are uniquely equipped to be the ones that physically defend. They are in general stronger physically. They have testosterone. They have more aggression. They have the psychology that's necessary for it. I mean, there's so many, they're made for it to do those kinds of things. So if you have a society that keeps kicking those guys to the curb and saying they don't have a place, they're bigots, they're the problem, it's the testosterone, it's toxic masculinity that's the problem, then you disincentivize it. And if you disincentivize it, there is no way to actually protect the things that truly matter, because who's going to want to step up and be a hero? Who's going to want to be a Daniel Penny or a Kyle Rittenhouse? But if you reward and incentivize those things by recognizing them publicly for the heroes they are, then it gives people a standard to shoot for. And there's going to be a standard, like no matter what, there will be a standard. But instead of, you know, selfish, I don't even know who are the heroes. I mean, you might be better on this than me. Like who are the people other than, I mean, you said Donald Trump for like right-wing Gen Z men, but like, I'm trying to think like who are the masculine-ish, maybe they're not even masculine in their traits, but like the men that guys look to in your generation. Do you even have an idea of that?
I can't really think of one off the top of my head besides like goofy superheroes maybe, or I don't know. you know what's going to happen? Right when this podcast ends, it's going to hit me and I'm going to remember something that was painfully obvious, and then I'll just say it for next week. But nothing at the moment. I got nothing. And I think that was actually the point I made on the Conversations That Matter podcast, my guest appearance there, where I was kind of like, yeah, Gen Z guys don't really have anyone to really look up to. But I don't know. I would say that for any Gen Z listeners out there, if you want like a hero, like, I mean, aside of like the obvious God, obviously God is a hero. Mm-hmm. He became flesh, died, and resurrected and ascended. And not only that, but he lived a perfect life. So that's, he is like the form of hero. But besides like that, look to your father. Many fathers have sacrificed a ton for their sons and their daughters. I know my father has sacrificed much for me. He worked long hours so that he could pay to send me to private schools from pre-K through 12. He worked a lot so that he could help me pay for my undergraduate degree. He has sacrificed a lot for me. And not only that, I've seen him be protective in circumstances where it looked like there were threats. So look to your father. That's always a good hero to have if you have a father like that. And if you have an absent father, look towards any figure in your life. Even women display heroic traits at times. You know, a mama bear is, thinking of just like the animal kingdom, a mama bear is scary. That's heroic, protecting her little cubs. And I think it was C.S. Lewis in one of his letters where he basically said like an angry heroic woman is arguably scarier than a man at times. But no, I would say that there are plenty of heroic figures you can look to, and just start with mom and pops.
We do have a question. What if the forefathers were a bunch of pagan devil worshipping idolaters or false religion, especially for those Christian converts, first generation wise, how would they honor them?
That is a good question. I think that what you would need to do there is, first off, you're not confined to just your direct ancestors, especially if you're a Christian. You can look to, even if you don't have a drop of Jewish blood in your veins, you are a spiritual descendant of Israel, and every faithful saint in the scriptures, Old and New Testament, is your forefather, and you can look to them. And not only that, though, is that even our fathers prior to Christ, depending on which civilization and culture, oftentimes still did display heroic, virtuous things. If you are if you're a European man reading the Odyssey, you can still look to the heroic acts of Odysseus and say, I want to follow in this trait. Now, there are a lot of bad things that happen in ancient Greek and Roman literature, of course. But I mean, there is a notion, though, of civic virtue. And Peter Martyr Vermigli, I can't remember where he talks about this. Actually, Stephen Wolfe, in his In Case for Christian Nationalism, cites this section. I'll have to find it later. I let someone borrow my book. But he basically says that even civil virtue, even if it's not virtuous in the eyes of God, can stave off the punishments that God has for a nation. You can look at what pagan or like a pagan men caught up in false religions have done that are heroic. And what you would do is, while they may have been doing it for their own honor or glory to a false God, what you can do is you exemplify those virtues in your life, and you do it to the glory of God. So insofar as you are receiving glory, that glory with you as a Christian united to Christ is a participation in the very glory of God, so that you can say with the Apostle Paul, may I never boast in anything save the cross of our Lord Jesus Christ, by which the world has been crucified to me and I to the world. So you can still look to your forefathers. There are plenty of people that are not Christian that have done good heroic deeds. The only thing that separates us from them is that God does not see it to be glorifying to him, but it is still a civic virtue which can be exemplified to the glory of God.
Well, I'll do you one better and give you Augustine, who said that
smarter than me, so that's good.
The redeemed are capable of, quote, that which is spiritually good, unquote, but, quote, works done by unregenerate men may be things which God commands, and of good use both to themselves and others. Mm-hmm. So there you go. Augustine agrees with you, which is always nice. And
definitely nice.
I've been thinking about this a little bit too, with just the whole, like there is this version of natural law, which is autonomous, which of course we would both reject. I think it's a more of a modern version perhaps, but there is this idea though, that we find, you found it right there in Augustine that I just read. You find it in later scholastic thinkers and reformers, that there is this good, not heavenly good, but this earthly good that can be accomplished by men who are not Christians. And you think in scripture of examples of this. Jesus talks about fathers who give their sons fish instead of snakes. You think of the rich man and Lazarus. Lazarus is concerned for his family, even on his way to hell. Mm-hmm. I mean, how do you account for that? Jesus says you're worse than an unbeliever if you don't provide for your family, which assumes that unbelievers do something good for their mm-hmm. families. So you have all these examples in scripture, and I'm sure there's more, that point to the fact that there, I know people are thinking, well, you know, no man can do good. Not one is mm-hmm. righteous before God. That's true, but we're talking, this is where the separation comes in. They're, mm-hmm. they can't please God, not in a heavenly sense. They don't do it for completely pure motives, but there actually are these creation wired into you dispositions or instincts. I guess I don't like that because it's so associated with animals, but there, if you want to use that term, sure. There are these things that, like, you know, we even as a secularized or paganized society recognize, hey, a mom who kills her kids instead of takes care of them is a psychopath, right? Mm-hmm. Like, why do we say that? Why do we think that? Because so all that to say, to back you up on what you're saying, Matthew, I 100% agree. And just because you don't have a Christian family or parents or whatever, I've often said, I've never heard a case where you can't find at least one thing to admire.
Absolutely.
In your dad, there's usually one thing. At
least. And like,
go ahead.
Someone I think of that comes to my mind is my great grandfather, my grandpa Bob. He was theologically, he was a bit wacky. He was a 33rd degree Freemason who was also a Unitarian. But when my grandma tells me stories about him, and he passed when I was about 11. He is just one of the coolest guys ever. I have his Bible, where he's like marked it all up, and it is one of the most precious things I have. I have a lot of his things, and he was in the CIA. He did crazy missions and things. He knew seven languages, one of like the brightest guys, and he just did all these really cool things. And I look up to him a lot. And do I think that he's, I can't say that. I mean, I can't say with confidence that he's in glory knowing his theological beliefs, but can I look at him as someone who I believe was heroic? Absolutely, I can, and I do. And yeah, and I just think it's a lot of the times the struggle that some people have is because they get into Reformed theology, they get into Calvinism, they learn what TULIP is, and they're like, oh, TULIP is awesome. And then their conception of total depravity is basically that men are just like wicked to the core, which in a sense is true, but there are still unregenerate men that if their family is being threatened or other people are being threatened, guess what they do? They defend their family. They exemplify virtue. Now, mm-hmm. like as we've stated numerous times, that virtue is not pleasing in the sight of God so as to be that which God rewards heavenly life for. But it is something which can still be said to be a good. Man is still naturally inclined towards doing good things. He does not do them towards the glory of God. And not only that, he still is inclined to sin as well. But, and this is where like the idea of like natural virtues and, acquiring virtues through habit comes in, or if you want to use more like a different type of language, this is where you see common grace, the fact that God restrains wickedness. So there's various approaches you can take to this, but we certainly can look to, and I think this conversation isn't really a rabbit trail because it ties into our topic a lot, because I have no idea about the religiosity of Daniel Penny. I don't really think that Trump is likely a regenerate Christian. It'd be really cool if he is. I'd hope that he may be. I hope God maybe used that after his first assassination attempt. But we can still look to these people as being heroic figures that we look up to in various ways for the things that they have done and for the sacrifices that they have made.
It's interesting. You make a good point there. But we're getting all these. I didn't know this it was going to take this turn, but here we are. A lot of the Asian cultures literally worship and offer many sacrifices of many sorts right now, still as a form of ancestral venerations, incense temples and all. So wanted to see a biblical statement. So yeah, that's true. There are these corrupted forms, religious forms in the East, where it's not just in the East. I mean, you know, I know Native American traditions. I mean, there's a lot of traditions that will worship ancestors and that kind of thing. So, you know, where's the line there? I mean, once you start deifying your ancestors and, you know, ascribing attributes that we are talking about at the intro of all the American Churchmen podcasts that are unique to God, and you start ascribing those to your ancestors, you've definitely crossed the line. You're making sacrifices to them as if they're, you know, somehow benefiting from this and deserving of it and so worthy, making them, you know, they're humans that sin. So they're, you know, you think of like the statues to Greek gods that are just like a little bigger, a little higher than humans. They're not that. They're humans just like you, but they may have some character qualities that you want to emulate. And Paul said, follow me as I follow Christ, follow those who follow in that path. So that's the idea. Ultimately, it's Christ that's the template, and every one of us matches Christ in an imperfect way. And here's another thing. Here's the problem with the younger generation of men that don't have role models. 42% of children are born to single mothers. After divorce, 80% of women get custody of the children. Didn't realize it was that high, 42%. I looked up. So this is a different, I don't know where these stats come from. It says 39.8%. Maybe it's older. But it said in the Black community, it's 69.4%. And it's a pretty comparable among American Indians and Alaska Natives. Native Hawaiians and other Pacific Islanders, it's 50%. Whites, it's 28.2%. Asians, it's 11.7%. So it gives like all the different stats. Mm-hmm. But certain communities or subcultures seem to have a bigger problem with this than others. And particularly in the Black community, Father's Day may be a confusing day in some of these regions where most of the kids on the street, they don't have a relationship with their father, perhaps, you know, or if they do, it's somewhat damaged. And so this does become a hard thing. And that's why what I think you were saying, Matthew, is important, that this isn't just limited to, like, we understand ideally your father would be there to honor, but if you don't have a direct father, then look to spiritual fathers, look to father figures, even, you know, find someone who's a role model and start emulating them. So, John Gordon, what are we discussing tonight? We're coming to the end of what we're discussing, Daniel Penny and a broader discussion about heroes. Well, we have an option here. We can either start talking about the woke right, which I don't feel inclined to do, or we can just say, let's get questions in, and then we're going to land someone said I shouldn't use that phrase anymore, but I I'm going to do it. We're going to land the plane in the podcast. any final thoughts from you as people are submitting questions?
Nothing really new to what I've stated, I guess, other than, I guess maybe I do have some thoughts. I was just kind of thinking back to the prior comment about like the ancestor worship and things like that. The guy was talking about in Asian cultures. And I think that there's a sense in which there are some cultures and peoples that are so wicked that it's very difficult to find any good. Like if you were descended from the people of Sodom, maybe right after it got destroyed, it may be really hard to find things to honor and exemplify. And I guess that my advice for someone who may be in a situation like that in regard to their fathers is to, firstly, number one, first and foremost, seek to honor your fathers anyways. Do the best that you can. Look for whatever virtues they have. And number two, if you just can't find anything, as I stated, grace does not destroy nature. It perfects it. But, you know, we still have our spiritual forefathers to look to. If you are united to Christ, if you're united to his church, you are a part of a large tree with many branches, with many people that are like grounded, that descend far back from Abraham to Moses to King David to the prophets to the apostles to all these people that you can look to. And not only even that, look to your Christian forefathers after the apostolic era. Look at the church fathers, even the medieval schoolsmen, despite the many disagreements you may have with them as a Protestant. Those are still your fathers, and you can honor them regardless, because there are various spheres. So even if you have a hard time honoring your natural fathers by blood, you can still honor your spiritual fathers and go elsewhere. And the Lord will look to your heart, and I'm sure that he will not be too dissatisfied with what you do. So that's all I would have to say about that.
Well put. Matt Pearson is my favorite member of the woke right, says David Carlson.
Oh, thank you, David.
That's what
I appreciate
you get for that,
that
beautiful cap on the conversation.
Yeah, David's a good friend, good bud. So, you know, I'm glad that I'm his favorite woke rightist. I try to be the favorite of the woke right, but there are a lot of people I'm competing with. so yeah.
Yeah, I know. And yeah. With only, you know, 14 minutes potentially left, we're not getting into that. So we're probably just going to end it. But yeah, Matthew, appreciate it as always. And if you all have questions, comments, conundrums, whatever, you want to find us on social media, you can go to theamericanchurchman.com. That's theamericanchurchman.com and find our link. So anyway, with that, God bless.
Yep. See y'all.
What is Dax, are you?
Tracking all our cars on Carvana Value Tracker on all our devices? Yes, Kristen, yes I am.
Well, I've been looking for my phone for...
In Dax's domain, we see all. So we always know what our cars are worth.
All of them?
All of them. Value surge, trucks up 3.9%.
That's a great offer.
I know. Sell?
Sell.
Track your car's value with Carvana Value Tracker today.